He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council, executive producing. You're listening to Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Bearded intern doing a heck of a job. Robbie Stanley from NHL.com. We've been doing this for a while. Feels like it was, you know, the beginning of the playoffs. Feels like it was just yesterday. And now, months later, you are joining us.
I feel just, like it was years ago.
Not just for a segment. You're joining us for a full hour to break down everything that we need to know about the Major League Baseball draft, right?
And Kevin Durant's mom.
And Wanda Durant got a lot of TV time last night. I'm here for any questions you guys have about that.
About Kevin Durant's mom.
Yes.
She seems like a nice lady.
Nice lady. She got a lot of TV time.
Seems like she did a good job with her son.
Things that you could you could make Twitter explode by doing a I'm going to spend the next hour on radio talking about Kevin Durant's mom. Just
Wanda
tweet
Durant,
that.
Yes.
And this is and just see
Wanda
what
Durant says LeBron James is better than her son.
Yes, exactly.
Wow. No, but in all seriousness, we bring you on, obviously, to break down everything that you really know about. In addition to all the things that you're wonderful at, you obviously have covered the Preds for NHL.com all year and on this show. And we start by saying how much we appreciate your great work, how often we've looked at your Twitter wall to steal content, and how much you drive everything we have to say. No, we really do. We appreciate your great work in covering the team over the course of the year.
Well, thank you for saying that, and I appreciate you guys having me all year. It's been a lot of fun, and the good
news is...
You're
not dying, are you?
No, no, I'm good.
Okay, good.
The good news is there's still a whole lot to talk about and a lot that's going to happen in the offseason.
Yes,
so it's going to be fun.
And he's covered the Titans for a minute.
It's almost that time, too.
So oh, yeah, no,
we'll
no.
be doing that as well.
Like, all we're going to do is make you put on a different hat, yeah. And then when you come in, we'll be like, Robbie Stanley
yeah, but
covering
every,
the Titans.
Every single time he comes in here, though, baseball hats, baseball teams.
That is true. Maybe we pronounce it different when he comes on to talk. We'll be like, Robbie Stanley coming on
well,
to
no,
talking
it needs
about
to be,
Titans.
Yeah. But it needs to be more French-Canadian if we're talking hockey. It needs to be more Southern... I'm not going to say redneck, but I'm going to say Southern if we're going to go NFL football.
Okay.
We can do that.
We'll work on that.
I think we can work that out, no problem.
We'll work on that.
Okay.
By the way, Brett Kearns, the punter for the Titans yesterday, came on the show gloriously suggesting that the chants from Cell Block 303 be adopted and utilized during Titans games. Do you support that?
Of course. That would be awesome. Like for the other team's quarterback.
Interceptions.
Or
interceptions. When the other team throws an interception, you chant the Bortles.
Yeah.
Bortles.
Oh, that'd be great.
Do you think Cell Block 303 would sign off on that?
Sure. It's one team, man. One Nashville. That's what they've been talking about all playoffs long. I think it would be great. You had 69,000 people screaming at Blake Bortles.
Because
he would throw a lot of interceptions.
Which is like a home
good
game for him.
And when they give up a touchdown, when the other team gives up a touchdown, you can just chant the team's name repeatedly and then do it's all your fault. Like, it still applies there.
See, I think you need to – I think the beauty of the – you know, like Murray. The problem I had with Game 6 is that they did it the entire game.
Yeah,
like
you got to score on it first.
You got to do it when you score, and that's why if you do it too much, it loses its luster a little bit. But interceptions, I feel like, for the opposing quarterback, unless you're Jay Cutler, are only going to happen a couple of times in a game.
Or Blake Bortles.
Or Blake Bortles. So three or four times is about as many times as you score on the other goalie.
Yeah.
That keeps it at a minimum so that it's more meaningful when it happens.
I think we're on to something here. All Brett Kearns, a genius.
It would sound spectacular.
Yeah.
And it's an homage to Bridgestone Arena and Predators fans.
And no other team in the NFL would do it. I think it's great.
There we go.
We should get this started.
All right, we'll see you next week, Robbie Stanley.
We already planned. We're going to have John Robinson, Megan Berry, Sean Henry and Brett Kearns together in a meeting, and we're going to make it happen.
Absolutely.
And
I'm 100%
and at Cell Block 303 will be there.
Yes, we have to have a representative
whoever that
from 303. Send your finest representative.
Yes.
That's fantastic. So let me ask you then a little bit about the Preds, obviously. When you look at this season and you look back at this season, at what point do you feel like you're able to sort of compartmentalize what you saw and then look forward?
Well, I think for me, that point's right now. It's very difficult if you're a player. I think it's going to take them several weeks to get over this. And get over it's maybe even too strong of a word. I don't know if they're ever going to get over losing in the final of the Stanley Cup final. But the good news for this Predators team is you look at the core and the youth that they have of this team, and they're not going anywhere. I mean, they're going to be really, really good for the next few years anyway. I mean, obviously, a lot of things can change in hockey. There's no question about that. But on paper, they should be very, very good for a few years. And the run they put together was magical. I mean, we've talked for years about, you know, all this team needed was a deep playoff run to really get this city behind them. And I don't even think we expected it to be at the level that it was. And it wasn't just Nashville. It was the state of Tennessee. I mean, You looked at Knoxville having watch parties, being the third highest rated city in the country watching Game 6. I mean, it was just unbelievable the amount of backing that this team and this city and really this region gave the Nashville Predators. And it's something I don't think a lot of people saw happening, but it was incredible to watch. And it's something you always remember kind of where you were on that Saturday of Game 3, watching 50,000 people outside of Bridgestone Arena. Just the scene and the environment there was something that I know I'll never forget, and I know the players of the Predators will never forget either. So it was an incredible ride, and I think Predators fans and the team in general, while it hurts right now, I think they should be really proud of what they did, because it was something that I think everybody around here will remember forever.
I'm normally not like this. I normally take like my team's losses very hard, like, you know, Mets lose the World Series or whatever, Packers lose a game, you know, whatever. I take my team's losses pretty hard, but for some reason I have flipped a switch on this team very quickly as a fan. And I know that there's a lot of fans out there that don't feel that way. There's a lot of fans out there that are like, why, God, we were so close to the cup. And I get that, and I don't expect the players or the organization to do that.
Right.
But I flipped a switch very quickly in appreciation of the run, because it was, A, so unexpected as a 16 seed. You lose Ryan Johansson going into Game 5. I didn't necessarily expect them to even get out of that series,
yeah,
much less go into – and again, these aren't excuses. It's not about making excuses for losing. It's about it's a reason why I'm able to sort of flip the page very quickly and appreciate the enormity of what took place and not get caught up on – like, there's still some people that are going to go to their grave thinking that that should have been called a goal in Game 6. And, like, that was going to change the outcome of the series. Probably not, and it sucks that that's the case, but I just found it very easy to flip the switch on and turn the page from stewing into celebration and pride very quickly.
Yeah, and look, I hate to say that, and I don't believe this to be the case, that this is going to be a really good thing to happen to them, that it's going to drive them next year to finish the job, because you never want to lose in the Stanley Cup Final. You don't know when you're going to get back there, because as I think the one thing that we all discovered in this run is how difficult it is to get to this point. I mean, you have to have almost everything go right. You have to get some good breaks every now and then. You have to avoid injuries at the right time. And for the most part, they did that until they got to the Western Conference Final and lost Ryan Johansson. That was just a gigantic loss for this Predators team. But it's so difficult to get to this point. But there's no question, just from being in that locker room the other night after the game, I mean, you could just see it on their faces how stunned they were and how hurt they were. And a lot of times you'll see in sports where it happens, you lose, and the Pittsburgh Penguins are a perfect example. They lost in 2008 to the Red Wings in the final, came back the next year and beat the Red Wings in the final. And I'm not saying the Predators are just going to steamroll their way to the Stanley Cup next year, but I do think this experience is going to be invaluable for this young core as far as determining how far they could potentially go and what it takes to get to this point. They know that now, and they know how to handle situations like that when it comes up in the playoffs.
Let me ask you the toughest question about next year for everybody, obviously. Are they going to change the jerseys with this whole Adidas thing? Because Form the Future's out on their socials. Yeah. It looks.
Do we even like that as a tease?
Are they going to change the jerseys drastically, you think?
It's not. From what I understand, it's not going to be that drastic. I think it's obviously when you're changing providers to Adidas, it's going to be a little bit different. But from what I've been told, the core part of the jersey is going to remain the same. It's not going to be that different. And I think Predators fans appreciate
that. And the logo's not changing.
Yeah, it's not changing. Right. I don't
think
so.
Because some teams to make everybody aware, some teams are doing complete redesigns of their jerseys in this process. And the Preds have been leaked on the list as jerseys that will be tweaked, but nobody really knows what that means. I mean, we don't expect the logo to change, but I just didn't know if you had any inside information on gold.
Sean Henry talked to us about this. I mean, I think it was back in like November or December, really early on in the year. And from what he said at that time, I don't believe there's going to be some drastic changes to this, which is good for the Predators. I think they've kind of built a brand with the look that they have right now. And there's no question, it's designed exactly what they wanted it to do. I mean, you know exactly what that logo is when you see it. I mean, it pops, and there's no question about that. And I think it looked incredible with all the people wearing that jersey outside on the plaza when you had 50, 60,000 people outside. So I don't expect it to change that much.
It was kind of a reminder when you saw some of the old school jerseys, which I appreciated people were wearing the old school jerseys, but it was a reminder of how little those popped compared to what we have now.
The ones with the silver on the shoulders. Yeah. I'm sorry, guys. Those had to go.
They've had some doozies in the past.
Those had to go.
But it's also a reminder of how effective Grow the Gold has been, because now that they've made this change, it stands for.
It's a simpler, cleaner look when they've eliminated, like, it was like nine colors.
Yeah, it was.
And now it's like two, maybe three. And I think it was a smarter move, and it's worked very, very well.
Now that we've given everybody just riveting jersey updates, when we come back.
People love jerseys.
They do.
Expansion draft.
Clicks.
The expansion draft conversation won't stop. So we need to get into it and take a look at what you expect in the coming days, because that's the biggest thing happening right now for the Preds. We'll do that next up with Robbie Stanley from NHL.com on Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. We're joined by NHL.com, Robbie Stanley. Robbie, we tried to hold like the Wolves off in the expansion draft conversation for like the last month. And, you know, the calls start trickling in and you try and hold them at bay. Right. And the whole time you feel like you're trying to keep the water dam from breaking. And it finally broke yesterday. So, you know, that's the first reaction after the Cup. Obviously, everybody comes in and says, what's going to happen? Now, we've been trying to educate everybody. Obviously, the expansion draft just a couple of days away. The Preds will give their list of players in a few days. And then we'll find out, I guess, on the 18th who they have left unprotected. And then Vegas will draft next week on the 20th. We'll find out on the 21st. So that sort of gives everybody the quick summary of the draft process. Vegas is required to take at least one player from every team. Mm-hmm. With that being said, do you have a guess right now on who you think will be left unprotected?
Yeah, I do. I think you'll see all three of Callie Yarncroke, Craig Smith, and Colin Wilson unprotected. And whether or not David Poile makes a deal to maybe protect a guy like Yarncroke or something like that, I think you will see him try to do that. I expect one of Craig Smith or Colin Wilson to be taken in this draft. And I don't know which one it's going to be. I think that's up to David Poile. You can make the moves and say, if you don't take Craig Smith, we'll give you a draft pick and all this other stuff. There's going to be a lot of backdoor deals around the way. But I do expect Callie Yarncroke, Colin Wilson, and Craig Smith to be left unprotected and then try to work some side deals, maybe some draft picks, some prospects in a trade to Vegas to ensure they don't take one of those two guys. But there's no question the Predators are going to lose a good player. I mean, that happens when you're at this level and you've just gone to the Stanley Cup Final and there's an expansion draft. Whoever you lose is going to be a good player. So that's something they're going to have to overcome. And the good news for them is they've had other guys like Aberg and Fiala and Gaudreau step in and fill roles where I think you feel a little bit more comfortable about losing a player now than maybe you did before the playoffs started.
Do Colton Sissons or Austin Watson figure into this mix at all in any conversation?
I certainly think Colton Sissons might be able to fit in this conversation. I still think you're probably looking at Colin Wilson or Craig Smith being the ones taken, but there's no question with the way Colton Sissons played in the playoffs. He's one that you're really going to have to take a look at if you're Vegas, I think, because it's just been incredible to watch how much he's stepped up.
Play the role of Vegas GM and give me your big board with those four players, Yarncroke, Smith, Wilson, and Sissons. Give me the order. The Vegas GM.
I would put Smith at number one. I just think when you've got a guy under contract that scored 20 goals or more three times in your career, that's tough to pass up. And I know he had a down year this past year, but the chances of him, in my opinion, having two back-to-back down years like that are pretty small. So I would put Smith number one. I would probably put Yarncroke number two because of the contract that he has. I think it's an extremely friendly contract, especially for an expansion team that you're looking to get players in right away that can come in and contribute. I think Yarncroke is just outstanding in what he's asked to do. He's a guy, and we all know this, he can play first line left wing or fourth line center or anywhere in between pretty much, and he's done that over the past few years for the Predators. So I think a guy like that would be very valuable for Vegas, and I think that's why the Predators are going to go to some extraordinary lengths to protect him, because a guy that's as valuable as Yarncroke is and can play in as many spots as he can, I think he's a guy with the contract that he has that is too valuable to lose. And we saw this playoffs, when a guy like Ryan Johansson goes down, you need all the center icemen that you can get. And that's why I think it's really important that they protect Yarncroke.
Well, you mentioned center icemen, and obviously, as of right now, we don't know what Mike Fisher's plan is going to be.
Yeah.
He's unrestricted at this point, so he's going to take a little time. The presumption by most is that he'll either re-sign here or he'll retire. Not knowing his decision right now, and with the expansion draft being so close to the end of the season, how much more pressure does that put on the Preds as they look at expansion and making sure that they protect centermen specifically?
I think it puts a lot of pressure on them to make sure they do that. And I, to be honest with you, I'm not sure if Mike Fisher even knows what he's going to do yet, which is a big part of it as well. And I think if he does re-sign, it will be with – or if he does play again, it will be with the Predators. He won't re-sign until after the expansion draft is over with, so they don't have to protect him. But I do think if you're the Predators, that's got to be a part of your decision-making process, because if you don't have Mike Fisher next year, all of a sudden that's another slot at the center ice position that you've got to fill. And whether that's Freddie Gaudreau or Vladislav Kamenev down in Milwaukee right now, I don't know what the answer to that's going to be. But there's no question that has to factor into your decision. And just the center ice position in general is so vital to a team's success that if you get Fisher back, that's great. It's one less thing you have to worry about, but there's no question until you know the answer to that. I think that's definitely something you have to factor into your plans if you're David Poile.
Let's say Fisher's back, just hypothetically. You could still argue, we talked about it during the regular season, this team needed to go out and get another position, probably the centerman. We had Matt Duchene tweeting about this organization and this team and this town. You got TJ Oshie out there, who's a spectacular player, and you've mentioned some young, talented players. You're going to have to replace Craig Smith, let's say hypothetically, a winger of some sort probably. And you're going to have to probably find another piece. How do they go about doing that? Is it the young players that you mentioned? Is it free agency? Is it trade? What's the most likeliest situation for David Poile?
I don't think free agency is very likely at all. You just look at the way David Poile has operated over his career. I mean, a guy on July 1st, he's pretty much done nothing, which is – that's just his style. And to his credit, I think a lot of times – that's been the right way to go about it, because prices get driven up on July 1st. You're paying way too much money for guys that are not worth the amount of money that you're going to give them. And I don't expect the Predators to be overly active in free agency. Now, the Duchene thing is interesting to me, because I don't think it's going to happen here. But if it were, I mean, you're talking about giving up a first-round pick, obviously. Maybe a guy like Dante Fabro, who was our first-round pick last year, that I think is going to be a superstar defenseman in this league one day. And bringing in a guy that, you know, maybe is your second-line center behind Johansson, and all of a sudden you've got a 1-2 punch, and that's something that you've really got a chance to make some noise with in the Western Conference next year. Or do you think Colton Sissons has proven enough that he can be that second-line center for you? I don't know. It's a small sample size in the playoffs. There's no question he played much better in the playoffs than he did in the regular season. But they've got a lot of options they're going to have to consider, because – I do think that they're probably still a piece or two away. I mean, you want to make sure – you can't just assume that because you went to the Stanley Cup final this year that you're just automatically going to be back there next year. I mean, that's a very dangerous game to play. I do think there are areas where they can improve, and I think maybe bringing in another center iceman or another top six winger is an area they need to consider.
It seems like Kevin Fiala and Austin Watson solidified themselves as starters this year. I think people forget – that at the beginning of the season, those guys weren't regular players. Like, they weren't starters. Fiala went up and down. Watson even actually didn't. He had some moments where he wasn't necessarily – we didn't know exactly what he was going to be, and he settled in. Assuming those two guys keep their positions, and Fiala's healthy and Watson's back, who are those two guys next year?
I think Auberg has played his way into a full-time role. I really do. I think he's been really good. I think Freddie Gaudreau will make the team out of training camp. I think he'll be the center, their fourth-line center next year. I just think those two guys, they have the speed, and they have – I mean, Pontus Auberg was outstanding to me in the playoffs. I don't think he's a first-line winger. I think that was probably a little too high from what he was asked to do here in that last couple series because of Ryan Johansson being out. But I do think he's a guy and Peter Laviolette talked about this in the playoffs. He was ready this year. They just didn't have room for him. I think they're going to have some room for him next year. I think he will make the team out of training camp. I think those two guys, Auberg and Gaudreau, we'll be full-time NHLers next year.
I want to get your thoughts on this, but we'll do it on the other side. I'm going to ask you this question because you just mentioned hypothetically Craig Smith is gone in the expansion draft. My question is, if he's gone, is it really that big of a difference and that big of a deal to the Preds going into next season? We'll get your answer on that, get your thoughts on it next up with Robbie Stanley, NHL.com. I'm Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Robbie Stanley joining us from NHL.com. And I've got a couple of questions that have come in from Twitter for you specifically. But before we get there, I'm going to say something shocking and offensive. Who cares if Craig Smith goes in the expansion draft? Like, is that really an unreplaceable piece to this Preds' success?
Not with the way he played this year. It's not. And look, the playoffs, Craig Smith missed a lot of it, and they still surged on, moved through, played well. And look, like I said, I don't know if it's going to be Craig Smith or Colin Wilson, Callie Armstrong, whoever they lose, it's going to be a valuable piece to their team. But I don't think it's necessarily going to be a piece that just takes the rug out from underneath them. They've got so much depth on this team now, and with younger players like Sissons and Auberg and Gaudreau and maybe Kamenev stepping into the fold, I mean, you've got to feel pretty good if you're the Predators that even if you lose one of these guys, you're still going to be able to rebound from it and be a really, really good team. So, no, I think regardless of who they lose in the expansion draft, it's not going to be the be-all, end-all as far as what they do next year.
Well, and I think Kevin Fiala is the name that stands out as the guy who is very clearly could score 18 to 22 next year and take over the role of either Craig Smith or Colin Wilson. Vladislav Kamenev, what are the chances he is playing regularly midway through the season next year? Give us a breakdown on this young fellow.
I don't think he's going to make the team out of training camp. I still think there's a little bit left to his game that he needs to sort out. But there's no question he's close, and he's very talented. You just take a look at how big he is. That's the thing that stands out to me is today's game, you need big center icemen. I mean, you look at Ryan Getzlaf and Evgeny Malkin, and I'm not saying he's going to be either one of those guys, but the size
that'd be nice.
That would be very nice for this Predators team. The size is very attractive with him because he's a guy I think that has a potential to get in front of the net and be very difficult to move and be a nice playmaker for this team. So halfway through next year, I think he's got a pretty good shot to be up, but I don't think he's a guy that's going to make it right out of camp.
Well, John on Twitter actually asked me to ask you about the rumor of Kamenev bolting to the KHL, according to Hockey Feeds, and wondered what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I would say that's unlikely. Not impossible. I mean, we've seen it happen all the time, whether it's Alex Radulov. I mean, Vladimir Nichushkin left Dallas and went to the KHL. Now there's
rumors.
Yeah, exactly right. Now there's a rumor that he's going to be coming back. So, you know, it's always tough to tell with those things, but I would be pretty surprised if Kamenev bolted to the KHL.
I feel like you're on a team that needs a centerman, and you just played in the Stanley Cup Final. Like, hello,
right?
Like, it just seems like an idiotic move that there is a seat that is warm for him.
Yeah, and
some point in the very near future.
Yeah, and I get it. I mean, a lot of times you get homesick and you want to go back home and play hockey, and I think that's been the case with a couple of guys that have left and gone back to the KHL. But just, I mean, there's no secret. I mean, the culture over there is just so different than it is here that it takes some adjusting to get used to. But like I said, I mean, I'd be very surprised if Kamenev went to the KHL.
All right, I'll open up this can of worms just because it's going to be the number one storyline, I think, all offseason, and it obviously involves the goaltenders. And Pekka Rinne is the guy. He's still under contract for a couple more years, still in that age where he could still very much be a dominant player. We saw he was a dominant player at times in the postseason for most of the postseason. And then, of course, the road games in Pittsburgh happen, and you're going up against a great team. After long stretches of the regular season where he struggled, do you expect basically an identical setup at goal next year where you're playing UC a little bit more, Pekka's still the guy, and we go into the postseason with 35 in net?
Yeah, I mean, I expect Pekka Rinne to be the guy. I expect when the playoffs start next year, he'll be the starter. I do expect Saros to start more in the regular season than he did this year. I just think with the age of Pekka Rinne, and not only that, the ability of UC Saros that he put on display this year, I think you'll see, I'm not going to say an even split, but I think you'll see UC Saros start maybe 5 or 6, 7 more games next year than he did this year. And, you know, that doesn't sound like a lot, but that could make a huge difference. I mean, the older Pekka Rinne gets, the lesser of a role I think he's going to have in the regular season. Not to say that he's not going to have a big role and be a big part of this team. I still think he'll be the starting goaltender, and it'll be his team and his net again next year. But I do think UC Saros will play even more in the regular season next year than he did this year, and then Pekka will be your starting goaltender in the playoffs once again.
So at Maxwell's House on Twitter wants to know your thoughts on Hansel or Boyle. I almost said Hansel and Gretel. Hansel or Boyle.
That Hansel is so hot right now.
So don't know if you have any thoughts on them.
Yeah, Hansel went to Minnesota this year. It didn't really work out that well for the Wild. He's a guy that spent most of the year in Arizona, was traded to the Wild, and that was supposed to be the piece that kind of put them over the top, and we all know what happened to the Minnesota Wild in the second half of the season and into the playoffs. It did not end well. He's a guy I'd probably stay away from. He's a talented player, but he gets hurt a lot. And that's something I don't think this Predators team needs. As far as Boyle, he's a guy that really fills a role maybe in your bottom six, And I don't think that's necessarily what the Predators are looking for right now. I think if you're going to get another center iceman in free agency or a trade, whatever the case may be, I think it needs to be a top six guy that can come in and produce a lot of offense. I think you've got the pieces in place to have a really good bottom six center iceman. I think Yarncroke is best served in the bottom six. Maybe you think Colton Sissons could be your second line center. I don't know if he can or not. I don't know if he's proven for a long enough stretch yet that he's able to handle that. But I think if you're going after Boyle, I think that would be a guy that you just have enough of right now. You've got a lot of pieces, I think, that could fill his role.
What does James Neal's situation look like contractually, and what does that mean for the organization and for his, you know, future with the team?
Yeah, he's got one more year left now. So it's an interesting thing, and, you know, you've heard a lot of people talk about maybe he's the guy that you leave unprotected in the expansion draft because he's got one more year left on his deal, and you would almost be daring Las Vegas to take him at that point. I still think that's risky because I do think Vegas would try to take him, and then you'd lose a guy that in his career has scored 20 goals or more in every season that he's been here, been in the NHL. So it's a risk.
Like nine times.
And he's one of, I think the other guys on that list are like Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews and Ovechkin. Like, that's the list that he's on. So I think that's very risky. I don't think the Predators will do that. There's no question that he's going to be a guy that you try to maybe get re-signed in the middle of the year next year. You don't want to go to unrestricted free agency and let him get to the open market. But I do think that James Neal, just from talking to him, loves being here. And he goes out of his way to talk about how much he loves being here. And that's obviously when you just come off a Stanley Cup final run. We haven't really talked about this element of it yet, but I think that makes it a lot more attractive for players to stay here. I think it makes it a lot more attractive for players to come here from via free agency. And that's something I think the Predators have never really had before, is that attraction from around the league of, gosh, you know, forget Toronto and all these other places. I want to go to Nashville and play there. I've seen the crowd. I've seen everything outside. It's really cool. And the team is really good. So I think from that perspective, we're about to enter a new part of this Predators franchise of, you know, it's really attractive place to be, not only for people that are already here, but maybe for free agents around the league.
Taging Jimmy Vesey.
I mean, how much, when you think about it, and we think about James Neal, specifically somebody that didn't have the year most of us expected, but you look at the success, for example, of Jofa. It was about getting the right group of guys together. We've talked already about a second-line centerman of some sort, but how much of James Neal's limited effectiveness, in your mind, came from the fact that he just never had the right line combo with him?
No, I think that was a lot of it. He was a guy that moved around a lot in the regular season. He was on a different line a lot. You know, he started, we all thought he would start the season on that big line, so to speak, with Forsberg and Johansson. And that's what we saw a couple of years ago with how effective that line was at times. And there were times where he was on it. He looked great. But Victor Arvidsson just kind of forced his way up to that top line. And then James Neal was kind of in limbo after that. He spent some time with Cali Yarncroke, a lot of time with Cali Yarncroke, actually. Spent some time with Colton Sissons. Spent some time. He was on the fourth line at one point. So, I mean, he's a guy that moved up and down the lineup a lot. Still finished with 23 goals. It was a down year for him, per se, I guess. I mean, his first year here, I think he had 23, and then he was at 31 last year, and then this past year back at 23. So he's a guy, you know where he's going to get. You're going to be around 23 to 30 goals every year, which I think is very valuable. I do think the Predators have some younger players that can also eventually step into that role. I think Kevin Fiala is a perfect example of that. I think this time, 2-3 years from now, Kevin Fiala is going to bring you similar production to what James Neal does.
Well, and what's interesting is if Craig Smith is the pick, you have a Wilson Fisher, and you re-signed Fisher, obviously.
Yeah.
You have a Wilson Fisher Neal line that has had a lot of success in the past.
Yeah.
And that would be a pretty good two, which pushes Fiala, Yarncroke, whatever, to the third line, and you're going, I feel as good about that third line as anybody in the NHL at that point.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
But do we feel good about Wilson at this point? I mean, that's just a fair question.
That's a very fair question.
When he was with Fisher and Neal, he was, you know, but I guess your point is for all 82?
Yeah,
as opposed to just the 20 in the postseason?
I mean, if I'm telling you that I got to rely on Colin Wilson to help win a cup and take the next big step here, is that realistic?
I don't think it is. Look, I mean, he's had some great playoff performances. This year was not really one of them, and it's tough because he was hurt for a lot of it. But
played well in Game 6 against.
He played
Pittsburgh,
well, yeah, he played well. But you know, you're always wanting more with Colin Wilson in the regular season, and I think at some point you just have to realize that this is just kind of what he is in the regular season. I mean, he's been in the league a long time now. I don't think there's going to be this next magical step where he scores 35 goals in a regular season. It's just not going to happen. So he's a good player. When he's on, he can be dominant at times. But the problem with Colin Wilson has always been he's not on consistently enough to be a guy that I think that you can rely on.
So when we come back, there's some coaching rumors going around. We've had a couple of tweets to want to ask you about it, and we'll address it. There's at least the rumor that the Preds could be losing one of their key assistant coaches. So we'll address that next up with Robbie Stanley from NHL.com. I'm Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. You're listening to Braden and Fitz live from the Game National Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet. We're hanging out with Robbie Stanley. So, Robbie, sitting there the other day before Game 6, and I'm just flipping through some of the hockey rumors out there, and all of a sudden I see, bam, that there are a couple of teams, most notably,
pow,
I think, Buffalo, a couple of teams that were waiting for the final to end so that they could have the opportunity to interview Preds assistant coach Phil Housley. Do you think that Phil Housley is going to be on the bench here next year?
I honestly don't. I think Phil Housley has a very good shot of becoming the head coach of Buffalo. I mean, you just, for obvious reasons, it's a perfect fit. I mean, he spent so many years there as a player in Buffalo. I think he's done an excellent job as an assistant coach, and he's a guy that's a popular candidate around the league. There were rumors that Florida was waiting to interview him, Buffalo as well. So I do think that he's a really good fit for Buffalo. I think there's a very good chance he becomes the head coach of the
Sabres. Did the Preds have good defensemen this year?
Yeah, I think so.
Pretty good. Not bad.
I mean, what loss?
And had to deal with injuries the entire regular season?
They did.
Yeah, try and put the loss into perspective for people. Like, what's that going to feel like, and how does that affect the team next year?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to be as bad as people have made it out to be, and that's no disrespect to Phil Housley. I think he's a great coach. But you take a look at this Predators team, with the core of it being on defense, they know how to play now. They know how to play under Laviolette's system. Phil Housley's been a big part of that, but I think so many of them have been with Housley for 4 years now, and Subban just for the one. But they know what his lessons have been. They know how it's – and Coach Laviolette, I think, regardless of who he hires next, they'll carry some of those similar mindsets with them. The big thing is Housley's in charge of the power play. And so their power play could look a little bit different next year, depending on who they bring in to work with that.
Well, given the way it looked at times during the regular season,
I wouldn't go say it.
Yeah, well, I did. A couple of people chiming in want to get on the phones with you, Robbie. So James in Nashville. James, what do you got?
Hey, guys, we've been talking about forwards and even some goalies and stuff, but you guys bring up defensemen, and that's what I want to talk about. The third pairing was victimized pretty well during the finals. It definitely looks like the other coach strategized to get his key players on the ice with our third pairing. They were effective for most of the year, but when it came down to crunch time, it wasn't there. Do you think that we go out and look for some upgrades at that position going into this next season? Thanks.
James, thanks for the call. Robbie?
Yeah, I think there's a pretty good shot they do. I do think there's a chance they look at least signing one veteran defenseman, bringing him in here and playing on that third pair. And the thing is, you've got Fabreau and Girard down in the minors and in college. I still think they're probably a year or two away from being NHL ready, so they're not necessarily options next year. So at that point, I think if you're the Predators, you also have a guy that was really good for the Milwaukee Admirals this year in Alex Carrier, who I think has a strong chance to be on this team next year. He's played really well for the Admirals, was an AHL All-Star. So I think there's a decent shot that Carrier can make the team too, and I think he would be an upgrade too.
JC in Goodlettsville chiming in. JC, what do you got?
Yeah, guys, I'm kind of on the same – well, not the same lines, but second-line center, I think, with some point production. You put it between Fiala and Neal. I mean, Fiala, before he got hurt, was really just taking over games against Chicago, you know, and coming into his own. I think he's a 25 to 30 goal guy very, very soon. A good center there. Ideally, we could put Fisher on the fourth line center. Yarncroft's value is he only costs $2 million a year for the next 4 years.
Yeah.
That salary flexibility, along with Ellis, we're getting a great deal right now until he's coming a free agent or do the big money he deserves. So, if we can protect and let Wilson or Smith go to Vegas, that money can be used with the savings on Yarncroft and Ellis to get us a good second-line center, make that second line of Neal, whoever, and Fiala just as dangerous as our first line. That's what we want going forward. That's my thoughts. Thank you.
JC, thanks. The problem, Robbie, is there really a second-line center out there on the free agent market? Not from trade, but on the free agent market.
Yeah, his name is Mike Fisher.
That you're jumping up and down saying, that's the guy.
Not really. When you look at me, if it's going to be – I think if the Predators are going to get a second-line center, it's going to have to come through trade. And at that point, the conversation becomes, all right, well, what in the world are we going to have to give up in order to do this? Because it's not going to be one of the top four. I think – if anything, this playoff run proved
you're
how
top four defense.
Top four defense, yeah. Sorry, I think if anything, this playoff run proved how valuable the top four defensemen on this team can be. So there's something you just can't get rid of. So at that point, it becomes all right. What are we going to have to give up to get a second line center? And it's going to be pretty difficult to do, to be honest with you, I think. So you just have to hope maybe Colton Sissons is that guy.
Right.
So you don't like the center position as it stands today if Mike Fisher's involved. And you're going Johansson, Fisher, Sissons, Goudreau / Kamenev / Yarncroke. You don't feel that this group can get back to the cup final with that group of centermen?
Oh, I think they can. I absolutely think they can. And
it's
especially,
just risky?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying if you're relying on Colton Sissons to be your second-line center, because regardless if Mike Fisher comes back or not, he's not going to be the second-line center for this team. He's just not.
Right.
I think this playoff run proved that. I mean, he's 37 years old. I mean, there's nothing against Mike Fisher, but just at this point in his career, I think he's more valuable in the bottom six. So if Colton Sissons can step in and play that role like he did in the playoffs at a full-time basis, then you've got your second line center. You don't have much to worry about. But if he can't, then I think it's where it becomes more difficult because you need a guy to set up, like the caller was talking about, you need guys to set up Fiala, to set up Neal, to score those goals. And if Colton Sissons can be that guy, that's great. That's perfect scenario for the Predators.
Well, and you mentioned it. That was my issue. One of the only things I probably would have tweaked, again, I would have liked to have seen Arvidsson and Forsberg on the same line with Yarncroke at some point, just because once Johansson got injured. Because I just don't – Sissons and Osberg played well together, but I didn't see them generating chances for Philip Forsberg. Now, should Forsberg have generated some more on his own? Maybe you could argue that. But I didn't see that line do a whole lot throughout the course of the playoffs when they were together. That was my concern watching that group.
I would agree. And, look, there's no question when you take a look at it. I mean, they're spending a lot of time matched up against Sidney Crosby. And, you know, that's just too high for Colton Sissons.
Right.
I mean – nothing against him. It's Sidney Crosby. That's a guy. That's a situation. That's why you went out and traded for Ryan Johansson, is for that type of matchup right there. Right.
I mean, to me, that's the whole thing. Like, there's a difference between a serviceable center that can get the job done and somebody that can elevate everybody. And the fact is, when you talk about the Jofa line, part of the appeal of the Jofa line is that it had Arvidsson and Forsberg playing just out of their minds. When they were split up away from that center, they weren't as effective. That there is some element to me. In my mind, I'm looking at it saying,
you and I can score goals alongside Ryan Johansson.
And if we believe that James Neal is capable of being an epic goal scorer, and we believe that somebody like Kevin Fiala can step up, things like that, then do we owe it to ourselves as an organization to look at a way to get a center that can come out and not just be a guy, but be the guy on a second line that can sort of elevate everybody else with him?
I think so. It's certainly something I think David Poile is going to have to consider. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Whether or not they believe Colton Sissons could be the second line center or not, I think you still have to take a look around what your options are going to be. And if there's a way that you think you can bring in a guy that fills that role and you know has been there before, he's proven it, then I think at least you have to take a look
at it. And it's like we were talking yesterday, if you can go out and get a guy in free agency, which doesn't seem to be the case at center position at least, you could spend a lot of money on Oshie, but you may not use him at the right. That would be basically saying we're moving Yarncroke into the middle essentially at that point. But Duchesne, if you think Matt Duchesne is the last guy you need, then giving up a defense prospect and a draft pick because you think Duchesne right now for the next five – because the thing about him, what, he's 26 years old, 27, 26?
Yeah, 25, 26.
I mean, he could slide right into the nucleus and be a part of the next 5 years. And if you think you're one piece away from having a five-year window, maybe you do have to go out and get that guy.
Yeah, and that's a tough decision that David Poile is going to be forced to make because obviously this team has what it takes to compete. They were just in the Stanley Cup final. If you think that giving up a young prospect who we all think is going to be really good in one of your two stud defensemen in Samuel Girard and Dante Fabbro, if you think that's going to be what it takes to push you over the top and bring in a guy that can fill that second-line center position and stay in this window that you've got right now, sometimes that's the sacrifice you just got
to
make.
Well, and to your point, Robbie, I mean, what we know about David Poile, he's not particularly active in free agency,
right.
But this team has always drafted well, And the fact is, he is not afraid to pull off a blockbuster trade.
Not afraid
so we
at
know,
all.
Yeah. We know those. That just sort of feels like what's going to happen, if anything, in this process. Robbie Stanley, obviously, NHL.com. You guys follow him at rstanleynhl. Robbie, it's been a joy and a pleasure to get to see your pretty face in studio for an hour and to help us get through all of this expansion talk, man. We appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been fun, guys. Thanks for having me.
Robbie Stanley, when we come back, it is time to go unfiltered. We'll do that next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.